It's a pleasure to be here in such esteemed company. In fact, such esteemed company that I feel almost embarrassed to comment on the relevance of C.P. Snow's famous lecture to academic culture today. What I principally want to do is to focus on Snow's comments and concerns from my perspective, both as a Minister for Universities and Higher Education, but also as Minister for Science, Business and Innovation. As David mentioned, before I was a politician, I was a Tudor historian, and the arts and humanities have completely shaped my view and understanding of the world. I've often said in this job I want to be seen as the Minister for Humanities as much as I want to be seen as the Minister for Science, and being able to bridge that divide, which I think is an entirely false one, is one of my ambitions in my career as a Minister for Universities and Science. It's been tremendously exciting to witness what can be achieved when these two disciplines combine. So I was interested to revisit Snow's lecture from this vantage point this evening. And reading over the lecture over the Easter holiday period, I think I was first struck by Snow's admirable, not quite clarity, but his ability to be, let's say, honest about how he saw the world. I often think if a politician gave a lecture using Snow's phraseology now, it would have ended up on the front pages of every tabloid. But let me start, you know, with, I think, some of the relevance of that lecture still today. For me, as David mentioned, my start as a career as a historian, I would agree certainly with Snow's remark that history graduates have been lucky to earn 60% as much as scientists, and it seems that Snow certainly didn't need the longitudinal education outcomes data to tell him that. But I was struck by three interrelated concerns that Snow outlined in his lecture series. His focus on the education system, in particular his pioneering approach to international comparisons, his desire to secure the UK's position in a changing world, and his dedication to meeting challenges faced by humanity as a whole. And I believe these concerns are as relevant today as they were then. The issues that surround them, I believe, has changed. In UK business and universities, the relationship between the arts and sciences is, as we know, becoming far more fluid. And this is all to the good. Indeed, 60 years on, it remains absolutely necessary if we want the UK to lead the world in meeting the challenges we face. Instead, today, I believe there are different barriers and boundaries that we must overcome in the higher education system if we're to adapt and respond to meet the needs of the present day, as Snow was indeed so keen for it to do so back in 1959. Removing the traditional barriers of course structure, lifting barriers to access participation, breaking down the worrying division between town and gown, these are the new fronts that will shape the future of education today. And so when we look back at when Snow was writing in 1959, we know there have been significant changes. We've now got around 50% of the UK population going into higher education compared to about 5% of young people when Snow was speaking. And in terms of the gap between arts and sciences, those boundaries have become blurred. Way back in March 2011, before Snapchat or Amazon Echo, before most people in the UK had even heard of Netflix, Steve Jobs launched the iPad 2, saying technology alone is not enough. It is technology married with liberal arts, married with humanities, that yields the results that make our hearts sing. And he was right. It was never just the tech that made Apple's products so popular, allowing them to shape consumer behaviour. It was the design, the user interface, the understanding of how people relate to their devices. As Snow said when he lamented that division between the arts and the sciences, the clashing point of two subjects, two disciplines and two cultures, of two galaxies, so far as that goes, ought to produce creative chances. In the history of mental activity, there has been where some of those breakthroughs came, and he was right. So it's no wonder we're increasingly seeing this multidisciplinary approach across business. In fact, whole industries rely on that fusion of different areas of knowledge for their success. Take video games companies, for example. They employ coders and computer specialists, psychologists and anthropologists, musicians, artists and storytellers. They must do so in order to create the powerful narratives and compelling products that have made gaming a staple of UK creative industries. And in universities too, we are seeing that arts and scientific convergence continue. In 2012, UCL launched its pioneering BSc degree, giving students the opportunity to study for a joint liberal arts and science degree, allowing students to apply for different approaches to a given problem. And the Royal College of Arts describes itself as evolving into a university focused on science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. And with initiatives like the Intelligent Mobility Design Centre, which sees artists and designers working alongside scientists and engineers. And in September 2020, the first undergraduates will take their places at the new London Interdisciplinary School, with degrees organised around complex problems rather than subject disciplines. Now, I'm not pretending that this state of affairs, where we need to be, is ubiquitous. Our education system does remain highly specialised, a major criticism of Snow's. But in the absence of appetite for reform, we need to be looking to increase diverse skills within the current system, for instance, by focusing on employability, something that has been a key issue around what the OECD's criticism of our HE system. And despite this specialisation, when it comes to bringing the arts and sciences together, and while there's progress and momentum, there is a growing appreciation of the importance of these interdisciplinary approaches. So this is all to the good, because the interweaving of science with the arts is crucial for meeting those huge environmental and social technological challenges that we face today. Just as Snow felt that overcoming division between the arts and sciences was necessary for the UK to perform our practical tasks in the world in 1959, and just as Snow was concerned by Britain's relative ability in this regard, today we want the UK to lead the world in responding to the global challenges we face, so that as the world decarbonises, as industrial societies age, as the AI revolution unfolds, we are at the fore, seizing the benefits and mitigating the risks presented. And we'll need the arts and sciences to work together closely more than ever before if we're to achieve this, so that designers and ethicists, material scientists and engineers collaborate to tackle these issues head on. Think of artificial intelligence, for example. We need to work across disciplines, both to ensure its development and its deployment is ethical, to unlock its potential. And that's why our Centre for Data Ethics and Innovation, which advises government, boasts members such as Lord Robert Winston, the Bishop of Oxford, Professor Luciano Floridi, Professor of Philosophy and Ethics at Oxford. And our Centre for AI and Music, Queen Mary, just one of the 16 centres for doctoral training set up to explore AI, computer scientists and machine learning specialists are working alongside creative companies and major arts venues. In this fourth industrial revolution, the intellectuals are anything but Luddites. So while we're on track to allow the arts and sciences to connect and address the challenges that we face in the future, there are other barriers that I believe that we need to remove urgently that will shape the future of our education. Because make no mistake, education is changing still in front of our eyes. The question I believe we have to ask ourselves now is whether the traditional three-year degree is over, as much as Snow questioned the end of the Cambridge TRIPOS system. Instead, we need new models that respond to today's economy and society, that accommodate the needs of industry, workers and students, and that break down traditional barriers around access and course structures. And that means flexible, portable learning, learning combined with on-the-ground experience. And these are new fronts, I believe, that are comparable to Snow's battle for an education system that can meet the needs of the future, as he saw it then, and of the day. What Snow never offered was an analysis of how to bridge together the two cultures, but we need to ensure that we can bridge together the gap that is emerging in the skills base in our modern industrial society. As industries evolve rapidly to responding to changing technologies, workers need to reskill. And this is helping to drive a move towards faster, flexible, portable learning. In Snow's world, in his lectures, you know, his concern was for the 18-year-old, but our concern must not just be for those students who are starting their education. If we're going to meet our 2.4% commitment by 2027 of spending that on GDP, 60% of the workforce will already have achieved their first degree. It is about retraining those existing workers within a current framework of higher education system. We've introduced, for example, accelerated two-year degree programmes to allow for students, maybe mature learners, to complete a conventional three-year course in two-thirds of the time, an attractive prospect for businesses upskilling staff or adults returning to education. But I personally believe it's the step-on, step-off approach that will fundamentally transform higher education, allowing students to take high-quality, intensive modules when they need them at a pace that suits them, including learning at a distance. The Open University and South Bank University, London South Bank University, already offer this sort of flexibility, and the government's recently changed the fee structure to incentivise more institutions to do this. And I want to keep on looking for ways by which we can support more flexible models of learning. The demand from students and business for industry experience is changing too, with more and more institutions offering degree apprenticeships and industry placements as standard. Universities like Aston are embracing four-year degree models, which give students that placement year, enabling them to gain valuable industry experience and workplace skills, as well as the contacts that they may not otherwise have. And other universities like Manchester Metropolitan are growing significantly their number of degree apprenticeships, where students gain that degree level of qualification along hands-on industry experience with a guaranteed job at the end of it. And I've been extremely pleased to see a widening number of universities and colleges expanding that offer of degree apprenticeships. I'm struck by their appeal, not just to different types of students, but also to different types of industries, from accountancy, business, right through to nursing and policing. So Snow talks of in his lectures of the pure versus applied silent sciences. And it really struck me how he highlighted the value of the engineer as opposed to the scientist. Now, today, Snow's engineer, I think, is more representative of the applied vocational careers which we continue to need to foster. Industry experiences that are massively valuable for students from less privileged backgrounds, for those who do not have social capital or family networks to give them an advantage in the job market. And I think when you read Snow's lectures back, they're permeated by his own sort of personal experiences, particularly fascinating anecdotes about his own grandfather, a signal engineer. And Snow seems to have understood that intergenerational divide. Snow talks about his great-grandfather coming from the sort of darkness of history, who was an agricultural labourer. And Snow understood the limitations of ambitions that can permeate through generations. While I don't quite share Snow's optimism that we will, as he's talked then, of being able to instantly end the rich-poor divide, still we recognise today the depth of poverty, both financial and also poverty of opportunity, that while the context may have changed, these issues are still there, and we must not take our foot off the accelerator in order to be able to continue to solve these. And this takes me on to my final point this evening, the civic role of universities. It should be clear from everything I've said that I absolutely believe passionately universities play a vital function in our society, not only enriching lives, addressing the challenges facing humanity, and educating the workforce of tomorrow, but also in serving their localities. Universities are crucibles of their local communities. They raise aspirations, providing opportunities that wouldn't otherwise exist. They are magnets for local businesses and industry, and they can completely transform and regenerate urban areas. We all know this. Yet sadly, over recent years, I think we've seen another iteration of the two cultures theme emerged, where society as a whole is failing to see that difference that universities make to our lives. What we've seen instead, replacing the two cultures as Snow saw them, is the rise of a crude them versus us mentality, with the public fighting back against the experts, with those who may not have experienced university themselves not seeing how that they benefit from them indirectly. This, I believe, is the new frontier of the two cultures phenomenon that we need to address in order to combat and overcome today. I'm not the first to comment on its existence, the dangers that it presents, and its worrying antecedents. Now, Snow may have inadvertently helped to perpetuate the myth of the intellectual or the pure scientist in terms that no one would perhaps speak of now, but we need to do more in order to be able to banish that false divide between the academic world and the outside world. In my own discipline of historical study, public history has undergone a rapid transformation in recent years, being able to communicate the value of historical analysis to wider audiences. And in my role now as science minister, I see how issues such as climate change or other pressing concerns are opening up the hidden world of ecology or environmental science to the public in ways we've never imagined even 20 years ago. There are tremendous efforts going on to help raise awareness of the civic benefits that universities and academic life bring to our wider society. The Made at Uni campaign by Universities UK is doing a fantastic job of explaining how university researchers have pioneered many of the innovations we take for granted. And likewise, the UPP Foundation Civic University Commission report illuminated ways in which universities contribute to their local regions. And I look forward to working with the task force in coming months on how we can spread that civic message going forward to be able to banish this modern two cultures analysis that I think is so wrong-headed that is taking place in our modern life. Although we are increasingly bringing the arts and sciences together in a way that I think Snow never saw imaginable 60 years ago, these are the new divisions that we need to overcome and the new fronts that are in Snow's fight for education system that responds to the needs of today. And it's on these fronts that I want to focus in government. Thank you very much.